Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Good afternoon, everyone. We are live worldwide on CUTV News Radio. This is your host, Jim Masters, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are excited to welcome a brand new guest joining us here on CUTV News Radio. We are exclusively featuring on our broadcast somebody who has an amazing story to tell. It's so amazing that she actually wrote a book about What Are Your Treasures? Author Cindy Barry Strobel. She is with us here on CUTV News Radio, and we'll be chatting with her in just a moment. She is with us for a two-part series this week, and she'll be back next week with us as well. It is noon Eastern at the time of this broadcast, and it is Thursday, July 6th, 2017. This broadcast will also be recorded and archived, and you'll be able to hear it on our websites as well as on iTunes and Stitcher and other great venues as well. You know, there is always hope no matter how bad your situation is. You just have to trust in the Lord that in God's time it will resolve itself and you will be able to follow His path and glorify Him in all that you do. Our very special guest, Cindy Barry Strobel, is the author of What Are Your Treasures?, which recounts Cindy's near-death experience a little over 40 years ago. Now, the book encourages readers to search within themselves to discover their true treasures. Cindy says she hopes to give a voice and some insight from herself and others on real-life experiences. By having Jesus in your life, she says, you can withstand any life event with purpose and support. She wants to encourage folks to find their own story of grace, to help others in their own life struggles, and become a treasure in someone else's life. A small-town country girl, Cindy had been attending college to be a medical technologist when a relatively minor accident dislodged something in her car that would slowly fill the interior of her car with carbon monoxide. Unbeknownst to Cindy, she was being slowly poisoned with carbon monoxide every time she drove her car. Over the course of several weeks, Cindy would experience headaches, totally unaware of what was causing them, until one fateful night when everything came to a head. After visiting family in Fort Worth, Cindy passed out in her car just outside her apartment complex. We'll talk more about the actual story with Cindy. But her story is inspirational, and her story, you know, is one where you take a tragic situation or near, in this case, almost fatal situation, and she's turned it around into a positive way to encourage folks to really capture every second of life and maximize it and to really count your blessings and to really note your treasures. Because anything can happen, as we know, in life, and life is so incredibly short. So it's a real honor and a pleasure to have Cindy with us, and for her to be able to share her story with us here on CUTV News Radio is quite a blessing for all of us here at CUTV News and for all of our audience, because maybe this story will inspire you. Maybe if you're having a bad moment now or a bad time, or perhaps just going through something in your life that seems so overwhelming, daunting, trapping, and frustrating, listening to Cindy's story may encourage you to realize that you too may be able to move forward and to look for the positivity in life and the glass being half full as opposed to half empty. Let's welcome our very special guest, Cindy Barry Strobel, author of What Are Your Treasures?, live and exclusively here on CUTV News Radio. Good afternoon, Cindy. It's such a pleasure to have you with us on the show. I've been looking forward to chatting with you, and we're so excited to welcome you to the show today. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I think it's a blessing that I'm able to do this and to share my story.
You know, It really, really is. And we're so glad that you are here and that you are able to do that and you survived that ordeal. Tell us a little bit about this situation. I just teased the audience a little bit in the introduction about the scenario where the carbon monoxide was leaking in the car. And tell us a little bit about the beginnings of all of this and that fateful period in your life.
Well, like you said, I was going to college at the time as a young teenager, and we all have our own dreams of what, you know, we want our life to be, and evidently God had other plans for me because he put me in a situation, in a very deadly situation where I died, and I actually saw Jesus, talked with him, and saw the Gardens of Eden, and saw the pearly gates, and all sorts of different things in heaven that people haven't really expressed or talked about. I even saw my simple place that he had prepared for me. But to go back to your question about how this all began, like I said, I was traveling home after visiting my cousins and aunts in Fort Worth, and I had experienced headaches earlier in the week, and, you know, if you're going to college, you're going to have a lot of stress in your life, so headaches kind of comes with it. So I kind of ignored it, but after I had my finals, I was still having headaches, and they were kind of concerning me, and I couldn't see what was happening, and my roommate, and so I just kept on the headache. Not a person who normally gets headaches, but these were just began to get some. So anyhow, to make a story short, I was coming back home from visiting my aunt and uncle, and it's kind of like late in the evening, and I'd had my car windows down, which is rare for a rare November day in 1972, to have your car windows down, because normally November is kind of chilly out here in Texas. So anyhow, I was singing songs, because I like to sing when I drive, and I was singing songs, and I just remember being happy and excited because my headache had suddenly disappeared, because when I was visiting my aunt and uncle, I had taken a Tylenol, and it had seemed to somewhat relieve my headache, and so I was very extremely happy that my headache was gone. But as I entered into my apartment complex, I began to feel really sleepy, and I was just praying to God to just please get me home safely without, you know, sleep. But I did fall asleep. It knocked me out, and I became unconscious, and I was, as I became unconscious while my car was still moving, my car, anything, as I entered into my parking space in my apartment complex, and it just went straight through to the very back of the complex. And there it sat running for many, many hours until, lo and behold, a volunteer fireman who happened to also be a security guard for my apartment complex started doing his rounds. And it had to be after dark because he said they were using flashlights and things like that. And he was with a friend, and they were talking back and forth. And they just about finished the rounds of the apartment complex, and his friend said, "Hey, what's that light in the back of the complex over there?" And they shined a light over there, and they said, "I don't know. Let's check it out." Because, you know, normally at that time, 1972, you had a lot of drug activity going around, and they didn't like people with drugs, you know, hanging around their apartment complex, because that could lead to other mischievous things. And so, anyway, they decided to go check it out and make sure everything was all right. And the closer they got to where they saw the light, they realized that it was my car parked back there up against the train link fence. Well, the security guard knew me because I generally am a very friendly girl, and I like to, you know, converse with people who are around me and stuff like that, especially the security guard. And so he recognized my car, and he was concerned that it was parked way back in the back of the complex and not in my parking spot where I normally have it. So as he got closer to the car, he realized that my car lights were on, but my car wasn't running. And he thought, "That's odd. You know, what is she doing right back here?" So he decided to open the car door to see, you know, if I was in there, because he'd already shined a flashlight in there, and he didn't see me in there. And when he opened the car door, I fell out of the car. And, of course, by then, I was already showing signs. I was already black and blue and not breathing. And he immediately did CPR on me. And I was told later on that they did CPR on me so hard and so long that I was black and blue all across my chest, because he was pounding on me so hard to get me to come back to life. And he came, he eventually got me back to life. And when he told his friend to go to the apartment complex to call, because about that time there was no cell phones, just didn't have the availability of, you know, immediately reaching for your phone and calling. He had to run all the way back to the apartment complex to call and send an ambulance. And when the ambulance came, they told the medical people who were attending me at the time that he didn't think that I was on drugs because my eyes were also at a pinpoint level, and that was also the sign of being on drugs. And since I was being sent to a county hospital, he wanted them to know that I wasn't on drugs because that's the first thing they look for when they see somebody with pinpointed eyes. And so, anyway, when I got to the hospital, they had a shift change, and so the attendant didn't tell who came on that they something else and to not look for drugs. When I came into the hospital, I was treated drugs, someone who was on drugs, and in that time, they had hundreds of people going into hospitals on drugs, and so you were just kind of pushed in the hallway in the back, and you had to take your turn before you were ever treated. So I feel like that it was a miracle that, you know, that number one, the person who saved me was a volunteer fireman, and he knew me, and he kind of knew what to look for, but he didn't, because he didn't put the two and two together that it was carbon monoxide that got me. And in the end, and a carbon monoxide accident happened as I was visiting my family during the Thanksgiving holidays, and I was decided to go visit my girlfriend of mine who lived up the road, and her driveway was on top of these giant boulders. And since they had a lot of family members there, there was no place for me to park but just to park on top of one of these big giant boulders. Well, when I parked on top of the boulder, when I got ready to leave, I backed out my car, and my car got stuck on one of the boulders. Well, they found out later on that after examining my car, that when I backed into the boulder, that it bent my tailpipe into the trunk of my car, and the trunk of my car happened to have a tiny pinpoint hole in the back, which made the carbon monoxide fumes enter into my car. So as I was driving back from home and to school and back those next couple of weeks, that I was slowly consuming the carbon monoxide poisoning. It was slowly killing me.
Unbelievable, huh? What a story.
Yes.
My God. It sounds like something you'd see on the Lifetime Movie Network. I mean, that was something else. Gee. And you never know. Maybe one day you will. It's just one of those. So are you experiencing any symptoms still all these years later, anything that is residual from that, or were you able to, from a health and healing perspective, able to get beyond that? Were there any residual effects from that whole, you know, other than psychological and dealing with a near-death experience, anything physically that you still deal with as a result of inhaling the carbon monoxide?
Yes, you know, even though I had it, you know, had that much, I had a whole bunch of carbon monoxide in me, you know, I even made medical history that day too, because the doctors had never seen anybody come in with that much carbon monoxide in their system and live and survive, much less be able to talk about it. But anyhow, yeah, I do have a little bit of residual side effects, and even today I do. It's not really, it's when I had the carbon monoxide poisoning, it affected my brain like a tornado went through it, because you don't know what's going to happen, you know, with your brain when you have accidents, because it's such a fragile part of your body, even though it is protected a lot. They said that my brain, that, you know, that they didn't know what would come happen, what I would remember and what I wouldn't remember, and I was, you know, kind of like numb from it from a long time, and it wasn't until maybe 6 or 7 months later, after I began to talk, that they realized, or that my parents realized, that I wasn't able to remember a lot of things. And slowly but surely, a lot of things did come back. But some of the things that didn't come back was my ability to read and write, my ability to know my left from my right, to tell time, my ability to understand directions. And I didn't even know how to even, you know, open a simple thing like a can opener. I had to learn a bunch of little bitty things. But over time, I did relearn a lot of that. But even today, I still have a little bit of residual effects, because my handwriting still, I never really got the knack of writing my handwriting enough to where I would be able to recognize it. When I go to the grocery store, when I write a grocery list down, I can write it down and I know what I'm writing. But if I wait, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes before I end up going to the grocery store, I look at my list and I have a hard time even reading my own handwriting. So it's a difficult thing to have your memory wiped clean like that and not, you know how to do even the simplest things, even the things that you should have already known how to do many, many years ago as you were growing up, much less, you know, having memory loss. So, and that's the only really true residual effect that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. So then the idea of writing a book about your experiences and about having people really identify and recognize what their treasures are, what was it for you that inspired you, obviously the situation that you just described, which was unbelievable, and thank God that you did, you know, sail through all of that, and you're here with us today. But when did you have that period when you said, you know what, I need to share this story, I need to tell this story, I need to see what I can do on this planet Earth to encourage people to stop, breathe, you know, engage with one another, love one another, count your blessings, honor and cherish your treasures. When did you go from this horrific experience to then saying, I want to write about it, I want to tell my story, and I don't want to just tell my story, I want it to have a positive effect on other people's lives?
Well, I always told my story from the beginning to friends and family who I thought really needed to hear, you know, about the afterlife, because, you know, they either had problems in their life or they were troubled by something, and I, you know, told it verbally, but writing it down, that happened on God's timing, not really on my timing. I never thought that I could ever really write it down, even though people, you know, suggesting you should write it down. It kind of happened, you know, timing, because when you go along through life, you know, you try and help people the best you can, but, you know, that can only go so far. And a book handles so much more and covers so much more coverage than anything else. And I was also going through my own troubles and things through life, as people do. And I was at Bible study class, and the host asked us all to write down our own baptism experience at the end of the Bible study. And so I was sitting there and I was thinking, okay, because nobody had ever asked me, you know, about my baptism or anything like that, and I never even thought about it. And I was thinking, was I baptized? Because I couldn't really remember, because a lot of that stuff was erased earlier on. And so I thought, well, what do I say to them? So I thought, well, you know, I'll just tell them about, you know, dying and going to heaven. You know, that would be my baptism, because I did feel like that I was rebaptized after seeing Jesus and everything, all that I went through. So I thought I'd just tell them that story. So that was really, so when I told them that story, they were a little bit, I didn't know sure how they were going to take it, you know, but I thought, well, they're Christians, they'll take it all right. So, you know, so anyway, as I started telling my story, their eyes got great big and bigger, and their mouths are flying open. And then after I finished telling them my story, they all took a deep breath and they said, wow, that's an amazing story, you know, and they started saying, you know, thank you, that it really confirmed a lot of what they believed, and they were really happy that I told my story, and they were amazed at how it all came about. And so anyway, the host asked me, he said, have you ever written any of this down? And I said, no, I haven't, because, you know, I told him what my problem was, or why my handwriting was bad and wasn't able to write it down. And he said, do you type? And I said, well, yeah, it's real slow. And he said, well, do you have the use of a computer? And I said, yes. And he said, well, why don't you try and typing it down and writing it down on the computer? And he said, I'm sure a lot of people would like to hear about it. So he was really the first one who instilled in me the faith that more and more people would want to hear about my story, and that he thought I could do this. And he had faith in me that I could do this. I didn't have really faith in myself that I could do it. It took me 5 years to finally write it all down and get it all into a book form. But that was a journey within itself, because I realized after, you know, you begin to start writing things down, you start remembering more and more things in your life. And I did start remembering more and more things than my initial story of telling my Jesus about my meet with Jesus and dying and going to heaven. So that, and therefore it ended up becoming a book, a huge book, because I had too much to say, and I had all the time in the world at that point to write it all down, because my children were away in college, and I was kind of, you know, not knowing what I was going to do with my life. So therefore I thought, you know, this would be a great time for me to write it all down. So I wrote it down. So it was all about God's timing in my life, and, you know, the right people to come into your life, and how God places people into your life at certain times in your life for you to do things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And so the story, how would you actually describe the story behind the actual book itself?
Well, are you talking about, do you actually mean, are you talking about that what I'm doing now, or are you talking about what we're doing, how it all came about, how the book all came about, or what is it exactly?
How it all came about. How it all came about. How it all came about.
Okay. Well, actually, after I was, you know, writing it all down, when I started writing it down, I realized, you know, that sometimes, you know, and as you're actually living your life, you don't see, you know, how your life is actually going. You don't see the connections in your life. You don't see the seeds that you're planting in other people's life. You don't realize the effect that you have on other people. And, you know, so while you're doing all of that, you know, you have to, you don't really realize until you write it down. And, you know, I just really encourage people to start writing it down, because then they'll see their connections in their life. And that way, when they see their connections, they'll see how God works within their life. And that's how I think it, you know, you ought to be, and you should live your life knowing how you are in your life, and be courteous to people, and be nice to people, and be, you know, be treacherous to other people. Because when you are treasured, when you do nice things to other people, you become their treasure, because you did something nice to them. And when you do something nice to them, then you need to think about, you know, what you, within yourself, about, you know, how you can grow in faith, and what that treasure that you gave them, what that will mean to them later on. And then as you're doing that, you should be witnessing to other people and encourage other people to be like Jesus and you know, and have purpose in your life. And for it to be, whether it's good or bad, whether your life is good or bad, you should realize, you know, that there's always hope, and that, you know, that if you lean on Jesus, he'll help you and get you through the troubled times in your life. And then if you are doing all of that, you'll realize that the treasures that are sent to you from God, you should embrace all of them, because those are the unexpected treasures in life, and that's where you will you'll be able to use and be able to fulfill your purpose in life, and you'll be able to use and help other people.
That is wonderful. Was there any hesitation on your part as far as wanting to share the story with the public? Were you hesitant at all in thinking, oh, this is a very personal situation, thing that happened to me, I don't know if I can share it? Or did you know right away, Cindy, that this is a story that needed to be told because it would possibly help other people really take a moment and look at their own lives and evaluate their own lives and really, again, count blessings and really appreciate the treasures we do have around us?
No, I knew almost immediately that was the reason why. Well, that was one of the reasons why I asked to come back, because when I saw Jesus several different times during my journey when I died. I witnessed him in four different forms, and one of the forms he was always testing me, and every time too he tested me a lot, and to see, because I asked him a question, and He answered me back with another question, and because that's just the way I found out, the way Jesus answers you. He doesn't always give you the answer that you think you want to hear. He'll give you the answer, a godly answer, to where you need to think about, well, how do I answer that question? And I need to get it right, because this is coming from Jesus. And so, yeah, I always knew that I needed to tell people about that, because it was not, you know, you talk to Jesus and you pray to Jesus, but some people don't always hear Jesus. And, you know, when you hear him and you hear his voice, you'll know how to answer. So, and that's what a lot of my book is about. And that's another reason why I felt like I had to tell people about my book and write it down afterwards, because it was just, I think a lot of people don't know how to hear him.
That's right, absolutely. What's the feedback been thus far to the book, What Are Your Treasures?
My feedback has been very good. Very few people have said, I don't believe a thing that you said, which I expected them to say that, because it is kind of, mind-boggling when you really think about it. But in this day and time, I think people really need to hear this, because our world is so different than it was when I was young and growing up. When I was young in the 50s and growing up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, early 70s, life was so much more simpler and easier to live and get along with. It was just, and today, people lock their cars, lock their houses, and back then people never locked their cars. They never put a lock on their homes. At least I didn't, our family didn't. We lived kind of in the country, maybe that was the reason why we didn't. But, I even talked with, I have a lot of friends and family who even lived in the city in that time, and they never, locked their cars at that time. And, the way of life is just totally different now than it was then, and it's so much more troublesome and frightening now than it was back then. Back then it's more peaceful and kinder. People were more kind to each other and stuff. So, so when people hear about that time period and stuff like that, even the young people, the people who are like in their young teens now, they don't realize how life was back then. So, yeah, they do like it. They find it very interesting. And plus, also, I kind of made my book into like a fairy tale type of a situation, because my name is Cindy, and I always dreamed or thought of myself as a Cinderella. And when all my accident happened and everything like that, when I came back with my memory being all blown out of the way, like a tornado had blown through it, I just had just debris to kind of pick pieces of my memory together, I sort of felt like the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz, the person, that guy without the brain, who's always looking for his brain. Well, I kind of felt like that. So that's kind of how I sort of wrote the premise of my story, was me being a Cinderella, a Texas Cinderella, and looking for my brain was the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz.
Amazing, huh? Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you really think about it. It was a good, definitely interesting and unique analogies. How can people find the book? Where is the book available? Is it your website? Is it Amazon? If people are interested in What Are Your Treasures, I know you have a website, whatareyourtreasures.com, but what's the best place for people to connect with you and to definitely get a copy of the book?
Well, I am on, you can get it on Amazon, which most people do these days, go to Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in e-form or hardback or paperback. And they can connect with me through Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm all over the place.
You're all over the place.
Yeah, I'm really everywhere. If you just look up, type in the words, What Are Your Treasures, you'll find me. I'm pretty easy to find, and I want it to be easy to find because I like to talk about
That's
it.
Fun.
And I love to help people in whatever way I can. So,
Well, it was a real pleasure chatting with you, Cindy, and thank you for sharing your story. You'll be back next week with us as well as we continue talking more about your story and about the book and other exciting things that are happening in your life. But I encourage folks to get a copy of the book, because maybe it'll help you and inspire you as well. Cindy Barry Strobel, thank you so much for joining us on CUTV News Radio today. It was a real honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have me talk.
Exactly.
That was it.
You did it beautifully. That's it. Thanks, Cindy. And thank you for joining us as well. I'm your host, Jim Masters. For all of us here at the CUTV News team, we wish you a great day. More great shows coming up. Don't go anywhere. But for now, thanks for joining us on CUTV News Radio.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.